Our episodes deal with serious and often distressing incidents. Listener discretion is advised. Before we begin today's episode, it would be great if you could give the next minute of your time to listen to a promo for the amazing The Shattered Window, a podcast brought to you from our friends Emily at Morbidology and Eileen from Crime Lapse, available on all major platforms.
The murder of Jacqueline DeWallaby is a tragedy that has puzzled and polarised the minds of those who know it. Over the past 6 months, we've extensively investigated this case, trawling through files, trial transcripts and archives, and have been conducting interviews with the people who've lived through it.
It was a sensational, startling fact that a seven-year-old little girl had shown up missing from a suburban home.
Something like that happening would have never crossed our parents' minds.
The notion that a stranger can slip into a child's bedroom in the middle of the night, completely undetected, is surely a notion that every single parent on this earth fears. But what's even more lamentable is knowing that a child killer is roaming the street, and even more chilling, they could be someone you know.
Hosted by Emily G. Thompson and Eileen McFarlane, this is The Shattered Window.
The Salisbury Crags in Edinburgh's Holyrood Park are stark grey-brown cliffs which stand over 150 feet tall and dominate the city skyline. They lie slightly over a mile to the east of the famous Edinburgh Castle and alongside Arthur's Seat, with which the Salisbury Crags shares an estate. Both draw many visitors to the area. The visitors mostly walk to the top of the peaks, picnic and observe the phenomenal views which the climb enables. Despite Arthur's Seat being a taller summit than the crags, many find being near the edge of the peak of the crags to be a more nerve-inducing experience, given the drastic fall to the path below, the so-named Radical Road, which would befall an unlucky walker or picnicker. That same anxiety-inducing drop is what has drawn so many mountain climbers to the crags since the early 1900s to scale the sheer face in front of them. In recent years, a permitting system was introduced, which meant that climbers could only go up the crags following one specific route at the South Quarry. However, on Friday, October 13 of 1972, it wasn't what went up the crags which was of concern. It was what came down them.
I'm GS, and this is Skinwalker.
Ernst Dumoulin was a trainee bank assistant. He had moved to the small town of Andernach in the district of Mayen-Koblenz, West Germany, in April of 1972. He was in search of a new start in life after falling on some difficult times. He had originally been born in Minden, West Germany, in June of 1951 to a Dutch father and a German mother. Soon after his birth, his family returned to his father's homeland of the Netherlands and settled in Rotterdam. When Ernst turned 8, his family returned to West Germany, where he attended schooling, then attended a commercial college to become a trainee bank assistant. Ernst became engaged to a local girl. However, in January of 1972, the engagement was broken off. The pain of the situation proved too much for Ernst and drove him to find somewhere new to rebuild, whereupon he settled in the provincial town of Andernach. Ernst was also not to be dissuaded from love through his broken engagement. Soon after settling in the town, he placed an advert in the local paper in June of 1972, stating that he wished to take a local woman for a partner with a view to becoming his wife. His advertisement was answered by a local 18-year-old girl named Helga Conrad from the nearby town of Schwerbach, West Germany, which lay around an hour's drive from Andernach. Helga was a quiet and unassuming girl who came from a well-off farming family in the small town. Her father, Helmut, ran the family's large farm, and Helga worked feeding animals and performing domestic duties. It was not the high life, as for all Helmut was a relatively wealthy man, the family were tough farmer stock, and luxuries were low down their list of priorities. When Helga and Ernst finally met, they began to fall deeply in love. Helga could not believe that the well-mannered and well-spoken man in front of her was available, and he felt that Helga presented an equally attractive marriage proposition. Ernst told Helga that he loved her the first time the pair ever met. They then embarked on a whirlwind romance and exchanged letters and went on more dates together. Then on the 15th of September, less than 3 months after having first corresponded with Helga, Ernst Dumoulin arrived at the Conrad's farm in his brand new red Fiat car to ask Helmut for his daughter's hand in marriage. He proposed the marriage to Helmut in the farmyard, where the older man was tending to his animals. Helmut told the eager lad that he thought a marriage was crazy this early, and the pair should at least wait until Christmas to ensure they could plan appropriately. This was what he said publicly. However, privately, Helmut wanted to ensure that Ernst Dumoulin could support a wife, as for all he wanted his daughter to be tough, he did not want her to be mistreated. Ernst Dumoulin reluctantly accepted the decision of his would-be father-in-law and retreated to the warm farmhouse. Helga then emerged from the house and asked for Helmut's permission to go a drive in the new Fiat which Ernst had arrived in, promising to be back in less than 15 minutes. He reluctantly gave his permission and returned to tending his animals as Helga and Ernst headed down the track to where the car was parked, with Helga waving to Helmut as she went. The drive which Ernst and Helga were taking was in fact much longer than 15 minutes. They were eloping and planned to drive to France to decide their next move. When they arrived in France, they wanted to put as much distance between themselves and the judgment of Helmut as possible. Ernst and Helga were now aware that Helmut did not agree with their marriage and that the request to wait until Christmas was more than likely a delaying tactic. When they arrived in France, they headed straight for the airport, and looking at the departure boards, they settled on London. The great metropolis was as good a place as any to run, and the booming London economy of 1972 would provide opportunity for the pair to create a living together. Helga's admiration of Ernst grew even further when he sold his Fiat for the then equivalent of £650, which would be somewhere in the region of £8,500 today, to pay for their escape to London. When the flight took off, a discussion began between Ernst, Helga, and a fellow passenger. When the passenger inquired as to their plans in London, the pair excitedly informed them that they intended to be wed and had run from Germany to do so. The passenger told the pair that they were excited for them. However, marriage laws in England were rather split on the matter. The passenger then went on to note that in Scotland, the laws were much more relaxed and they may find achieving their purpose to be easier there. With that, Ernst Dumoulin changed the destination of the soon-to-be newlyweds from London to Edinburgh. By September 19, 1972, the pair had settled into a lodging house at 9 Turficken Street, run by Herbert Wood. With a down payment of 3 weeks' rent in advance, Ernst and Helga met the first prerequisite to be married under Scots law, that of the residential qualification. On the 20th of September, Ernst was already looking to establish the pair within the city. He met with the Bank of Nova Scotia at their Princes Street office and set up a joint account with Helga with the remaining £250 from the sale of the Fiat in France. He also spoke with the manager of the bank to inquire about their loan terms. Specifically, he told the manager he wanted to borrow £10,000 and could obtain collateral from Germany to cover the loan. The manager was non-committal and told Dumoulin he would be back in touch about the loan and bid the young man farewell. The next step for the young couple was to obtain life insurance for one another. This was not entirely unusual, as despite their youth, life insurance has always been considered and promoted as a sensible investment for all adult residents of the UK. What was unusual, though, was the figures which were requested. Ernst Dumoulin had asked the manager of the Scottish Life Assurance Company to insure both his and Helga's lives for £100,000, which was an exorbitant sum in those days. The size and risk profile of the investment made the insurance manager uneasy. When Dumoulin explained that he intended to set up as a financial advisor in the city, having trained as a banker in Germany, the size of the request became more understandable, but it still seemed too large for the regional insurance company. The insurance manager did, however, have a relationship with an insurance manager called Mr. Sayer at a much larger firm called Hambro's Life Assurance Company. He offered to set up a meeting between Ernst, Helga and Mr. Sayer the following week at the Caledonian Hotel in central Edinburgh. Ernst Dumoulin jovially agreed, and they set a date to meet on the 28th of September at the Caledonian Hotel. When Ernst and Helga met with Mr. Sayer of Hambro's, he agreed to take on their request. A policy was drafted up and signed which insured Ernst's life for £190,000, with a stipulation this would be doubled in the event of his accidental death. A similar policy was drafted and signed which would insure Helga's life for £206,000, again doubling in the event of her accidental death. The policy costs were high given the values involved. With payments of £443 being due every month to ensure their activation, Ernst and Helga agreed to everything stated, and Ernst drew a cheque to Hambro Life Assurance for £221 from the Bank of Nova Scotia to cover the first 2 weeks of the policy, and made a promise to draw the same cheque up again in 2 weeks' time. The insurer failed to notice that Ernst Dumoulin had signed the document to state that Helga was his wife, while in fact she was only legally his betrothed. That was remedied on the 13th of October, when at 10:30 a.m, the pair were married in a local registrar's office in Edinburgh after exchanging I do's. The ceremony was witnessed by Herbert Wood, the owner of the lodging house in which they were staying, and his wife. On the wedding form, Ernst Dumoulin once again committed to his belief in his future in the financial industry by listing himself as a financial advisor, although he had currently not advised one single person on their finances. The pair then headed off with their small retinue to get coffee and some drinks. This was followed by a nice meal in a local Edinburgh restaurant. Helga told all and sundry that Ernst was going to become one of Edinburgh's most successful financial advisors, and she would be at his side, his trusted secretary and confidant. There was little doubt in the room when Helga stated how deep her love for Ernst was. The pair then went for a walk in Holyrood Park in the early evening, where they ascended the Salisbury Crags and admired the view out over Edinburgh. When they returned to the guest house, they retired to their bedroom, as many newlyweds would. Then, around 7 p.m, the pair left once more and headed out. Herbert Wood found their leaving unusual, as he expected when a pair of young newlyweds took to bed, they would likely remain there until the following morning. Nonetheless, he returned to his duties as the pair strolled down Turficken Street. They were once again headed to the Salisbury Crags. Helga had found the view so captivating she had wished to see it once more from the top, as dusk fell over her new home city. Ernst agreed to return once more for his newlywed's sake. By 8 p.m, the pair were ascending the Salisbury Crags for the second time that day. As they sat at the edge of the crags, kissing passionately and talking, seemingly unaware of the vertigo-inducing drop which their feet were hanging over, Ernst told Helga about the future that he envisaged for the pair, that they would live a life filled with wealth and love. When he finished describing his vision of the future to Helga, he asked if she was ready to go. She said that she was and stood up. Then, a scream went up. As Helga had gotten to her feet, she had dropped over the side of the crags, falling 150 feet to the radical road which ran below. An anguished shout came from the top of the peak, from the lungs of Ernst Dumoulin. By 9 p.m, witnesses nearby to the crags and on the radical road noted seeing a shaken and agitated Ernst Dumoulin screaming, almost at random, for someone to fetch an ambulance and that his wife had fallen from the crags. He also had a small injury to his right arm. A seaman who had been strolling along the radical road made a grisly discovery at the same time. At the foot of the crags on the radical road lay the battered corpse of Helga Conrad. During her fall, she had taken significant impacts and her body reflected these. He rushed to find a police officer and luckily found two patrolling nearby. When the police attended the scene, they too seen the bruised corpse of Helga Conrad, although they did not know her name yet. Close by, they found the shambling and distraught Ernst Dumoulin. They attempted to take a statement from Ernst at the scene. However, he simply repeated the information which he had previously been shouting. He was taken to Edinburgh's Royal Infirmary and received treatment on his arm, and was then released from the hospital. He returned once more to be questioned in the early hours, and after answering the police's questions, he was released on the provision that he stay in the area to ensure that the police could find him if they needed to contact him further. Ernst agreed and returned to the lodging house on Turficken Street. When he returned, Herbert Wood could not believe what he was being told. Less than 24 hours previous, he had been witness to the wedding of the happy couple, and now he was being informed that one of his lodgers had died. Ernst Dumoulin returned to the room on his own before playing the song Love Story on repeat. As dawn broke, Ernst phoned Helmut Conrad back home in Schwerbach. He told the man between sobs that he had married Helga. When Helmut asked where she was, Ernst replied that she was in heaven, then hung up the phone. After the year we've all had, we think that some forward planning and something to look forward to is just what is needed for Christmas morning. We have the perfect gift idea for the true crime enthusiast. Give someone an unforgettable weekend, two whole days of true crime immersive experiences. The weekend will include 50 hours of true crime content where your loved one can see leading true crime experts, meet famous true crime authors, listen live to their favourite true crime podcasters, and hear from victims' families and survivors. The CrimeCon Christmas gift box includes one or two tickets, plus two books from leading true crime publisher, Bonnier Books UK, which will keep your loved one entertained until we welcome them to CrimeCon in June. They can also bring those books to the show and meet the authors in person to sign them. And there's more. We will be there all weekend for anyone who wish to meet us. Also, if you quote Skinwalker at checkout, you can claim 10% off this offer. Ernst set up an emergency meeting with Mr. Sire from Hambro Life Insurance, this time at the Grosvenor Hotel in Edinburgh. Ernst informed Mr. Sire of the events of the previous day and asked whether the documents which had been drawn up could be destroyed rather than being made public. He stated he had no intention on claiming the policy, but the circumstances made the entire situation seem at best unusual and at worst criminal. He told Ernst that he would consider his request. However, he informed the police of the insurance policies which he had set out and agreed with Ernst Dumoulin and Helga Conrad prior to her death. This discovery led the local police to arrest Ernst on suspicion of having murdered Helga Conrad by pushing her from the summit of the Salisbury Crags. While interviewing Ernst Dumoulin, many facts of interest began to emerge. Ernst did not appear to be the smitten young lovebird which the story he had told initially painted him to be. He seemed more like a cold, calculating fraudster. His entire journey with Helga seemed to be predicated on lies. For the beautiful car in which he had led Helga away, he had cashed a phony cheque with the dealer for nearly 2,500 Deutschmark to secure the Fiat, with a used car to cover the remainder of the vehicle value. The fraudulent cheque was equivalent to £585 at the time, which is now around £8,000. Dumoulin had shown a level of canny, even after the fact, given he sold the car in France for more than he defrauded the dealership for it in Germany, without accounting for the used car which he had traded in. He also had it posed to him whether he had claimed to be almost a millionaire to Helga. He confirmed he had. In truth, he had gone from petty bank job to petty bank job and had been released by his previous employer due to substandard work and was left owing them a sizeable amount in loans which he had through his position as an employee. Ernst Dumoulin seemed in desperate need of money, and tied in with the outrageous level of cover provided by the suspicious life insurance, he was looking increasingly guilty by the question. The pressure was unrelenting, with the questioning being deliberately grueling and intense. The process itself was made more difficult by the need for Ernst Dumoulin to have both the questions posed and his answers returned, translated by a state-appointed translator, but nonetheless, the investigators felt they were progressing with the interrogation well. When asked what had taken place, Ernst eventually replied with the help of his translator, "I did push my wife so that she fell down the cliffs. I did not intend to murder her or with intent to gain money. I am no murderer." Ernst was then asked if he would like to make any statement in English to avoid any potential for misunderstanding, given that he had a degree of ability in the language himself. Ernst stated plainly, albeit with a small level of grammatical error for the officers, "I have pushed my wife that she fell down. I am not a murderer. I did not do it as a murder." With this admission, the police believed they had Ernst Dumoulin banged to rights. He was provided notice of the intent to prosecute and held on remand until such a time as his case came to trial, with a suitable period determined for the police to interview any remaining witnesses and the prosecution and defence to assemble their respective cases. As the date drew nearer, Ernst Dumoulin called his solicitor and noted that he had pushed Helga Conrad off of the Salisbury Crags, but had done so because she had tried to attack and kill him. He had only pushed her because his own life was in danger, and he had only acted in self-defence. Ernst Dumoulin's case came before the High Court in Edinburgh on January 23, 1973, where he was represented by the much lauded Sir Frederick O'Brien, QC. Although at this point in his illustrious career, he had not yet been knighted. The indictment, the name for the charge sheet in Scots law, indicated that the Crown wished to prosecute Ernst Dumoulin on two counts of criminal activity. One being the murder of Helga Conrad, but also that they wished to prosecute on his attempt to receive a £10,000 loan from the Bank of Nova Scotia, with a promise of securities from Germany, which he knew he could not secure. The prosecution brought forward a case predicated on a motive on the attainment of money. They argued Dumoulin to be little more than a fraudster, jumping from scam to scam and leaving destruction, and now murder, in his wake. The defence submitted a not guilty plea in respect of the loan fraud, self-defence in respect of the murder of Helga Conrad. Intending to put forward Ernst's version of events, that Helga had attacked him prior to his pushing her, a plan of attack was set together by Frederick O'Brien to show that if money was the motive being set forward by the prosecution for the murder, then the fact that there was no effective life insurance policy, and Ernst Dumoulin would have known this, blew a significant hole in that argument. On the 1st of February, after the Crown had provided all of their evidence in prosecution, Ernst Dumoulin chose to take the stand himself in his defence. While on the stand, he informed the courtroom he had intended to commit an insurance fraud, but not the one which the Crown was alleging led to the murder of Helga Conrad. Dumoulin told the court that he and Helga had planned his fake demise, where he would go missing, presumed dead at sea, and she would claim the insurance. Then they would return to Europe and live off the spoils of the insurers. They had even decided on Crammond Island in the Firth of Forth near Edinburgh to be the location of the ruse. He also provided a detailed description of the events from signing the insurance with Mr. Sires to then being atop the Salisbury Crags with his newlywed, ending with Helga attempting to push him over the edge. He managed to retain his balance, however, when fending off her second attack, he pushed Helga parallel to the crags, which caused her to lose her footing, and as she attempted to retain her balance, she had fallen off the side of the crags to her death. He stated his belief that Helga did not want the insurance money, but had potentially been struck by a moment of insanity, and only God himself had prevented it from being Ernst Dumoulin who lay dead at the foot of the Radical Road that evening. He also answered questions about an account he had given to another prisoner in Saucton Prison, where he described a witness to the event. The witness, it transpired, was God, and he was not able to be summoned to provide his testimony. Ernst Dumoulin had provided his testimony compellingly and with surprising lucidity. However, he had made one statement which directly ran in contrast to what Frederick O'Brien had been laying as his defence against the murder charge. When talking of the meeting with Mr. Sires of Hambro, Ernst Dumoulin stated that he believed that the insurance policy took effect at the time of signing, which by extension meant that he was also under the belief there was an active insurance policy on both him and Helga Conrad when Helga was pushed from the top of the Salisbury Crags on the day of their wedding. A further blow was struck to Dumoulin's testimony with the analysis of the medical experts, who stated that his version of a slip off the side from a push parallel to the edge did not tally with their findings post-mortem, which indicated from the velocity of the fall and the impact suffered during her fall, that she had received a strong push over the edge, which had resulted in her travelling some distance out from the face of the crags, before suffering multiple impacts as she impacted on various peaks, ledges and juts of the rock as she fell to her death. By this point in the trial, the allegations of falsely attempting to secure a loan were almost forgotten, with the sole focus appearing to be on weighing the guilt of Ernst Dumoulin in respect of the murder of Helga Conrad. At the end of the presentation of evidence, the jury were given leave to make their decision. The judge, Lord Wheatley, informed the jury that the facts were incredibly unique, being more akin to a thriller novel or film than what they would expect from reality, but that they must focus solely on the facts as they were presented to decide on their verdict. With only 2 hours of consideration, they returned 2 verdicts. Somewhat unsurprisingly, Ernst Dumoulin was given a verdict of not guilty on the much less charge of falsely attempting to secure a loan. On the real crux of the case, the charge relating to Helga's murder, Ernst Dumoulin was proven guilty. The judge held that Ernst Dumoulin was to be sentenced to life imprisonment with no minimum period set. Dumoulin had twice attempted to appeal his decision, but was unsuccessful on both occasions. He suffered greatly in Scottish prisons, with anti-German xenophobia being common and a growing sense of self-hatred. Nazi Bastard became his nickname among the hardened lags in Sockton, and he was tormented by the vision of what he had done to Helga Conrad, although he still maintained his innocence in respect of the crime. 2 years into his sentence, Ernst Dumoulin read a book called The Cross and the Switchblade. The book is a biographical account of a Pentecostal pastor, David Wilkerson, who puts himself in situations often of personal danger to speak with members of street gangs in Brooklyn, New York, and the stories which emerged from that mission. Upon reading the book, Ernst Dumoulin realised that he himself was the evil in his life. He had previously believed the world to be against him. His parents, his God, and even Helga Conrad had been the causes of his problems. After this epiphany, he realised that it was not them, but him. He even went to the warder and submitted his acknowledgement that he had been guilty of the murder of Helga Conrad, and renounced his statement that he had acted in self-defence. He also applied to begin studying theology at a local university through a prison outreach service, eventually securing a qualification while still imprisoned at Sockton in Edinburgh. In 1989, 16 years after his imprisonment and now admitting to his guilt in the murder of Helga Conrad, Ernst Dumoulin was released from prison at 37 years old. Helga Conrad had remained forever 18 after her murder atop the Salisbury Crags, but Dumoulin was to be provided a second chance at life as a free man. After his release, he returned immediately to Germany, settling in the small town of Kleinmeinsdorf, nearby to Hamburg, to work as a church helper with local disabled parishioners. After 11 years in this role, Ernst Dumoulin asked the local bishops whether it would be possible for him to take up the cloth. They confirmed that his past did not hold him back from doing so, and Ernst Dumoulin became a chaplain for his church, providing chaplaincy for 3,000 patients in psychiatric clinics in his new home state. In 1990, the reformed Dumoulin even met a local lady with whom he had a particularly strong attraction. He informed her on only their first date that he had been imprisoned for the murder of his former partner, albeit 17 years previously, and had both found God and served his prison sentence on his way to becoming a reformed man. She accepted him for who he was now, rather than in his past, and the pair eventually became married. They remain happily married to this day. In 2006, Ernst Dumoulin also gave a wide-ranging interview to the Daily Mail newspaper, where he addressed his past and his present. He stated that he had lived his life in pursuit of self-betterment and bitterly regretted his past. He stated he had even once attempted to visit Schwerbach in 1992 to apologise in person to Helga's family. However, the deteriorating health of her father and the discovery that her mother was dead stopped him from doing so. He instead visited her grave in the town and sobbed at the results of his own gruesome conduct. Helga's grave is not the only remembrance of the short life of a too trusting girl who simply wanted to see more of the world than a small farm in rural West Germany, ended by a conniving con man in October of 1972. Visitors to the Salisbury Crags will often take note of a memorial seat on the Radical Road underneath the peaks, which lets them rest their legs on their walk. When sat, closer inspection of the seat reveals a metal plate affixed to the rear, upon which there is the following words: "In loving memory of our daughter, Helga Conrad, born 16th of June 1954, died 13th of October 1972, buried at Schwerbach, Germany, only 300 yards from her parents' home."